today's featured guest, Jeffrey Nichols from Roslyn Capital. Joining me in this discussion, Jeffrey Nichols from Roslyn Capital.
Well, Chris, it's good to be here with you today.
You just penned an interesting article about a week or so ago. I think it's an excellent synopsis and analysis of how these markets, they had already discounted the Fed's, the FOMC's decision to increase the benchmark overnight lending rate a quarter point. It's intriguing because despite the hawkish talk and the threat of another rate hike or two, when we look at the Fed funds futures, it just didn't rattle the nerve or the resolve of precious metals investors. Please tell us more.
Well, you know, I think all the attention has been paid to the Fed funds rate. It's a nominal interest rate in the sense that it doesn't account for inflation. And the point we've tried to make all along in this recent article and for some time before is that it's really the inflation-adjusted real rate of interest that counts. And the real rate of interest is simply the nominal rate adjusted for inflation. And in the United States and in really around the world, we do have some inflation that is not insignificant. You know, the Fed has a target for the personal consumption expenditure inflation rate, which is very similar to the consumer price index inflation rate that everybody looks at. And if you adjust, if you take that real interest rate, you can see that you're losing money, putting money into an instrument denominated even in the Fed funds rate, simply because your value of your money is eroding, and that's what people are keying in on and are sensitive to. What is the value of the money that they hold? And the value of the money is decreasing as inflation increases. It's very simple. Inflation is a problem for the economy, even though nobody's paying much attention to it. The consumer price inflation rate has been running under 2% for the last few years, and it's likely to stay at levels around that or even higher. But I want to point out that when you go to the grocery store or you make another purchase, the inflation rate that you're seeing and that you're subject to is really higher than any of these official indexes, consumer price index, producer price index, PEC inflation rate. Those are indicators, but they're not entirely accurate. They don't take into account the fact that people are moving from higher priced products to lower priced products. When you go to the grocery store and you want to buy a few pounds of meat or chicken or fish, whatever, the package that you're buying is smaller than it was a couple of years ago. Yet the price may be the same or a little higher. To me, that's inflation. You're getting less value for your money. And that's what the financial markets are also paying attention to. How much value is there in your money? And when the value of your money is declining, it's a scenario in which gold prices are likely to rise because gold is a protection of your purchasing power. People who hold gold hold it in part because they don't want to see the value of their money erode, so they put it into precious metals, gold in particular. And that's what you have to be paying attention to. So for the last few months, there's been a lot of talk in world financial markets about the coming Fed funds rate increase. When was it going to take place? Was it going to be January, February? Well, it turned out that it was in March. It was very well discussed, very well reflected already in prices, but in a sense, it was a disappointment because it didn't even take into account the inflation rate, and that's a big problem, one that is likely to continue in the months and years ahead as inflation continues to sort of churn along at a level in which people aren't really paying much attention to. The published rates, but feel in their pocketbook and in their wallet what's happening in erosion of the purchasing power of their money.
Inflation remains a huge concern for Americans. One of the more universal, or you might say ubiquitous, indicators, the Big Mac indicator, and I know it makes people chuckle. A very close friend just yesterday was telling me they couldn't believe how the price of a Big Mac had increased. Now, I don't imbibe. I'm a vegetarian. And it's interesting because this is a, as folks know, the McDonald's franchise is worldwide and can be found in virtually every city, like a Starbucks cafe. It tends to be a rather reliable indicator, and it, I think, underscores your thesis that the real rate of inflation, there's a big disconnect between that and what our officials tally. But I'd like to move on to another topic, and that is the idea, yes, inflation is an issue, but what might be an equally pressing issue is the problem of employment and income. With rates being so low for so long, seniors and folks who rely on interest income, it's been a big struggle for them to keep
right.
up.
Many people have retirement incomes with fixed, and they don't go up over time. But as inflation goes up over time and the price of goods and services that retirees have to buy, as those prices go up, they find they can afford less and less. You know, they're getting fewer fries, if you will, when they go into Big Mac territory.
I think Americans, not just Americans, and this seems to be a worldwide phenomenon, but I guess we're focusing on the domestic economy. The level of underemployment, which is just an economist's moniker for flipping burgers instead of taking the job that you were prepared for in an institution. So we're seeing a vast underemployment. We're seeing a huge influx in temporary jobs, which really don't translate into stability. You know, the backbone of the middle class has for so long been the idea of job stability, an integral leg, if you will, of that success story.
The official inflation rate, which is about 4.5% these days, doesn't take into account the underemployment of millions of Americans who were laid off their work as engineers or business administrators or salespeople, and instead are now working at, let's say, McDonald's, where they're making a fraction of their income. These people are underemployed, and in the statistic of 4.5% unemployment, it doesn't count these people. They're like non-persons, if you will. And in addition to being underemployed, you have those who would like to go back to work, but there aren't jobs available for them at the salaries that they require to maintain that standard of living. So the statistics on unemployment and employment are inaccurate because they're not measuring the nuances of the employment, unemployment marketplace in the same way that we were talking a minute ago about the inflation statistics not accurately reflecting what's happening in the marketplace. So we're flying with blinders, if you will, and the aircraft is eventually going to crash because economic policies aren't really dealing with the underlying truth of the markets. They're pretending that everything is just hunky-dory, but it's not. And I think one of the reasons gold has done well in the last week, following the Fed meeting and the announcement of an interest rate increase, is that more and more people are coming to realize that the story isn't as rosy as policymakers would make it out to be.
There's a dualistic quality here. With widespread underemployment, non-competitive salaries and earnings, the overwhelming number of employed persons are hit by two forces at once. First, this rising tide of inflation that you've outlined so eloquently, and this struggle to find a meaningful income.
Well, you know, it's a fairly liberal view that we've really got two Americas, one that's doing well financially and one that's barely getting along. And the number of people who fall into that barely getting along group by leaps and bounds, and the number of people who are in the category of we're still doing well, we're getting our bonuses, our salaries are great, our kids are going to private school, blah, 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 that group is shrinking in size. And so, if it isn't already, it's placing great strains on American society that we're going to have to recognize eventually and find some way out of this mess.
I'm so glad you brought this up, and unfortunately this show, the topicality doesn't really include homelessness and some of the social issues that go along with it, but I actually find it fascinating. I occasionally watch the YouTube videos, hundreds of them, on this epidemic of tent cities popping up around the United States, of homelessness.
I don't think there's much disagreement that America is heading in the wrong direction when it comes to employment, unemployment, cost of living, and so forth. Disagreement comes over what is the best way to make things work better for more people. You know, so the conservative would say that we have to reduce the role of government, free up the private sector, they'll hire more people, they'll have the prices under control, and so forth. The liberal would say we've got the government to come in and fix things. So it isn't that the problem isn't appreciated by most people, whatever their political leanings, it's what the solutions might be. We don't really know what the solutions are, but, you know, it's probably some middle ground. But fortunately or unfortunately, you and I are in businesses that, in a sense, reflect the state of the economy. And as long as we've got inflation problems, and as long as we've got employment, unemployment problems, you know, gold is something that is likely to do well as an investment and as a protection against the problems in the economy.
Because at the Roslyn Capital website that I encourage everyone to bookmark, especially the monthly updates by Jeffrey Nichols here, you have the national debt clock in bold red type as it approaches, I want to say 20, I can't believe I'm saying, $20 trillion. My guess is that you're one of our pundits here on the show who subscribe to the concept that as long as debt keeps soaring, the precious metals remain an attractive asset class.
Oh, yes. With the debt soaring, it becomes increasingly difficult for the federal government to do the things that ought to be done when all of your money is going to pay the interest on the national debt. The interest on national debt is the largest single expenditure item in the federal budget deficit.
I did want to ask you, though, about the precious metals mining sector. This is the phoenix that's truly risen from the ashes in the past, let's say, 18 months, 12 to 18 months. On a percentage basis, it's startling, the recovery that we've seen, if you want to call it a recovery. What are the odds that, in your estimation, that we are entering a new bull market with long-term legs, for lack of a better term, or is this merely a reaction from the startling bear market we had over the last 5 or 6 years?
First, it's my belief that we've been in a long-term bull market for gold and gold-related assets such as mining shares for many years now, and that we've sort of maybe been on pause for the last few years, but the upswing continues and will continue to accelerate, if you will, and we'll see bigger and bigger gains in the years ahead in the prices of gold and precious metals assets. But also it's important, since you brought up mining shares, as well as mining shares may have performed, we have to remember that they're not the same thing as holding physical gold in the form of bullion or bullion coins. They have associated risks that aren't shared by holding the metal itself. If you invest in a mining company, more than anything else, you're investing in the management of that company, in its business acumen. Gold can go through the roof, and you can have a mining share that isn't doing well and find yourself where you thought you were going to have big gains because of a bull market in gold, find yourself being left out. So we advocate that the place for investors to start is with a physical gold investment, preferably bullion coins like the American Eagle or the Canadian Maple Leaf or the Austrian Philharmonic. These are real gold. Nothing but gold. And there's no management that you have to worry about. You don't have to worry about the political issues wherever the mine might be located. You know, many of these mines that you're talking about are located in countries that have unstable or unfriendly governments. You want to put yourself at the mercy of a dictator in Latin America or Asia or Africa where your mine may be located. That gold from that mine could be selling at higher and higher prices, but the management may be squandering the receipts, and you're going to be subject to that. So I could go on and on about the risks to alternative assets like mine shares and my preference for physical gold, but I think your viewers and readers have a sense of what I'm talking about.
We're strong advocates here as well of a solid core bullion position of gold and silver for every listener. In fact, I believe that is the traditional foundation of an investment portfolio and really should be of a savings account if you think of what sound true money actually is.
You know, you can be sure that people across China, a billion people or more in China, and another 800 million or billion people in India were in both of these countries. The economies are much, much bigger than the U.S. and industrial world economies. And we think that the gold price is really being determined by little fluctuations in interest rates in the United States or other, you know, Western economic issues. But in reality, the interest that Chinese people and Indians and others from around the world, from societies where gold has a certain cultural or historic or even religious aspect to it, we forget that these people are also helping shape the gold market and the future gold price. And they're not going anyplace except to the bank to buy more gold. So while we talk about interest rates and inflation in the United States, Fed policy and other issues, what really is going to matter in the long run is whether people in Asia, India and China in particular, what is their attitude towards gold? How much are they buying from us? And what is the impact of that on the world gold price? I say the impact of that on the world gold price is extremely significant. That my forecast of a continuing bull market in gold and historic high prices in years to come is based in part on the idea that people in these other countries are going to continue buying gold, and they're going to buy more as their societies grow and as their incomes grow. It's only going to make it more difficult for Westerners to acquire gold, etc.
India now has crossed, as I understand it, the billion-person threshold, challenging China as one of the largest nations in the world, and the prime minister knocked the two most widely held currencies to push their economy into a digital economy virtually overnight. And this is a nation where approximately 80-85% of the transactions involve cash, meaning bills and coins in hand, whereas contrast and compare that with the United States, which is roughly 30%. So one more reason why part of their customs, as you say, to transact large amounts of gold, they're relearning in real time, as are the Venezuelans, the importance of shielding themselves against their policymakers.
But elsewhere in Asia have a high respect and preponderance of interest in holding gold. And once they buy gold, they rarely sell it back to the marketplace. So in a sense, it's being taken out of circulation and makes it all the more likely that we're going to see surprisingly big jumps in the gold price in years to come. As Westerners, in a sense, vie for gold with Asians, they're going to bid the price up, and we're going to be very surprised to see new historic highs and prices several years from now, possibly a multiple of the recent price.
So many here on the show have expressed in recent years surprise in the lack of upward movement. In other words, it seems as though we should be at 1,500, 2,000 plus gold 6, 12, 18 months ago, that this thing that most obviously has to come to pass has been delayed. Do you have any thoughts there?
One of those who have been surprised by gold's failure to move higher faster. I've been a bull on gold for a long time, and anticipate that I'll remain a bull on gold for a long time yet to come. I think one of the issues has been the strength in other asset markets, particularly world equity markets and bond markets. And as a consequence, institutional investors and speculators, large-scale speculators and hedge funds and that type of participant have been attracted to the large size gains that have been available to them in equity markets. Wall Street has been very strong competition for gold, if you will, and a lot of the managed money has gone into ordinary equities. But I see that that's going to be changing in the next few years. One of the things that I look at from day to day is how is the Dow or the S&P 500 doing versus the gold price. And when we have days like today where gold is up fairly sharply for a single day and the stock market is down, it tells me that we may see money being moved from equities into gold, and it takes only a little bit of demand to create big increases in the gold price, and I think that's what we're starting to see recently in recent weeks, and what we're going to see again more so in the next year or several years to come.
Just another great bullet point. As we've mentioned here for quite some time, if just a fraction of pension funds and financial institutions as well as investors redirected funds from just a couple of the Dow components, we're not talking about the other 15,000 or so stocks, just a small fraction.
You know, we think because we're gold-oriented analysts and investors that the gold market is on a scale similar to Wall Street equity market or government bond market. But really, gold is valued in terms of the amount of trading that goes on from day to day or the amount of gold outstanding in the vaults of savers and Indian women's jewelry boxes and all that. When you add up all that gold, it doesn't amount to much compared to the volume of stock trade on the New York Stock Exchange, for example.
And maybe the takeaway is many folks, close to 100 million, have had phenomenal gains during this stock market climb. It's tied to the indexes. Most stocks have not fared that well. Maybe it's time to lock in some profits and make sure you have a solid 10 to 20% core bullion component of that portfolio.
That's why index funds have become so popular. They rely less or not at all on the wisdom or lack of wisdom of the investment manager running those stocks. And as you mentioned, investment advisor who you might pay a management fee to can't even do as well as the broad market averages, the S&P 500, for example. So if we see some of these people wise up and decide they're going to diversify into gold, only a small portion of their portfolio switching into gold will have important ramifications in terms of the price of gold and the relative price of gold vis-a-vis the equity averages.
The insurance policy that should be the foundation of a successful and methodical investment plan, as you pointed out and we've regularly pointed out, 90 to 95% of professional money managers fail to perform as well as the S&P 500. I mean, that's not to say there isn't the lone Warren Buffett, Paulson, and George Soros, and Jim Rogers, and so many other greats, but the odds of having that type of performance might be likened to being a successful professional athlete. It's kind of stacked
right,
against
us. There's only a small number for sure.
And that's a great place to wrap up the show with Jeffrey Nichols of Roslyn Capital. This is a must bookmark website. I mean, the Roslyn Gold Commentary, every month, it looks like. And I have it bookmarked. I actually have it at the top of my list here. And it's provided free of charge. So, Jeffrey Nichols, we thank you.
Okay, take care.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.